Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. It's Tuesday. I'm glad you came back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. And this morning, we are going to talk about a very, very interesting subject, I think. It's called hoarding. And I think a few of us have watched the show that's on television. That's what got me started out being amusing, and then I got concerned, and now I think there's a myriad of reasons as to why anybody would fill their home to such capacity that they can no longer walk through it. Now, obviously, there are different levels of hoarding. And during my research in regard to this, I found a really, really good article from the Mayo Clinic. And it talks about the various forms of hoarding. Now, if you've ever watched the show, you know the show can be like shocking, really shocking. I probably watched it 3 times, and each time I watch it, they usually have 2 to 3 people that they show their home, show them, talk a little bit about them. And sometimes the people are, for all intensive purposes, appear to be completely normal. And in the outside world, they function at a job, they do everything they're supposed to do, and then their home is this total disarray of debris and chaos. And it's, I believe, and I've talked about this on the show, that your nest has to be in order, especially us girls. Your nest has to be in order so that the rest of your world has some semblance of, organization, focus, all those kind of things. If where you live, where you spend your downtime hours is not comfortable, organized, and makes you feel good to be there, then there may be problems. So what I did find out, though, is that's what a hoarder is. A hoarder finds some comfort and some protection, I think, in that, that mess. We went from people who actually don't throw away their garbage, which is disgusting, to people who constantly buy things and store them all in their house. There's a little bit more organization with those kind of hoarders, but it's nonetheless gets to the point where there's literally a path through their home. And some of them that I watched very recently were like, they kind of sickened me. Bathrooms that feces and human feces, pet feces was piled up in corners. I mean, for me, those kind of things define real illness, define real mental disorder. But like I said, this Mayo Clinic article is pretty good. So I'm going to bring Shelley in, and I'm going to read bits and pieces of this. It's a 9-page article, so I'm not going to read all of it, but it has some interesting facts and some interesting information. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, this is a very, very interesting topic, and I have watched the show. There's another one called Buried Alive on another network. Same thing, though.
Uh-huh.
They cover people that hoard. So, they're both very, very interesting shows, very disturbing at the same time.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure. Because like I said, well, they take you through the various levels of it. And like I said, some are people that just keep buying things. And I know people like that. And
yeah.
I am, I put on my Facebook page last night, I am a collector. And as you know, I have memorabilia in my office that to some people, I'm sure, could be considered cluttered and not necessary. And but I also believe in keeping things comfortable and attractive and workable, because I know that it's good for my own personal mental health. Mm-hmm. So I want to read the Mayo Clinic definition of hoarding. Mm-hmm. Hoarding is the excessive collection of items, along with the inability to discard them. Hoarding often creates such cramped living conditions that homes may be filled to capacity, with only narrow pathways winding through stacks of clutter. Some people also collect animals, keeping dozens or hundreds of pets often in unsanitary conditions. Hoarding also, called compulsive hoarding and compulsive hoarding syndrome, may be a symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. But many people who hoard don't have other OCD-related symptoms. People who hoard often don't see it as a problem, making treatment challenging. But intensive treatment can help people who hoard understand their compulsions and live safer, more enjoyable lives. Now, what I've seen on the show, and then I'd like you to kind of think of some of the shows that you've watched. I sat the other day with the kids, and we saw three totally different sets of circumstances.
Uh-huh.
And that, I think that's what got me interested. Now, before, the kids have come out and said, "Mom, put on this channel, you're not going to believe this woman's house." And I've looked at it, and that's as far as it's gone. But the other day, I sat and watched three episodes. And two were obviously mentally challenged ladies who were twins and have lived together their whole life. And two were a mother and daughter, and one was a single woman. And all of them, the scenario was totally different. One house was like, I mean, just garbage, paper, wrapper, food, cat poop and everything. I mean, just piled all in together. And it was 5 years ago, they had had their house deemed unlivable. And the neighbors and the government or whoever stepped in to help them remodeled their whole home with some of their savings. I mean, they had to pay for everything, but people, volunteers came in and helped them, started fresh, and after 5 years, it was back to the same place again.
Wow.
And their homestead where they grew up as little girls, after the parents died and everybody else was gone, the same thing happened to that house, and they had to leave it. So this is we're talking about women that were in their 60s. So we're talking about a lifelong journey of what, I mean, you know, an evaluation of two people like that from my amateur status would say that they're looking for fulfillment. They have each other. They hang on to each other. They support each other's bad habits, so it became a way of life for them. I mean, I'm sure it goes much, much deeper than that. The second one was an older woman she had four children. The three children moved out. The youngest child was born a little person. And she could barely make it through this house because she had to climb up on piles of garbage to get to spaces. And in all these scenarios, they had one little spot that they laid in the middle of all the garbage, and that was their bed.
Yep.
And then the third one, she couldn't even use her bathroom. So when she went to visit other people, she asked if she could borrow their bathroom and would go in and shower and wash her hair because she couldn't do it at home. So with three really different sets of circumstances. But I was like, wow. And if, well, the two ladies were a little eclectic, the two older ladies, and articulate, talked fine, showed the TV cameras all the new stuff that they had purchased and had in a big pile in their kitchen for when or if they ever needed it, a toaster oven and an electric frying pan and a popcorn pot, you know, all these kind of things in boxes, all in a big stack. But there was no way in hell anybody could have cooked anything in the kitchen.
Oh, boy.
And their van looked exactly the same way, to the point where there was barely space for them to sit. There was stuff falling over the backs of their seats in the van.
Oh. Yeah, I've seen some of those shows. I mean, the one that I had seen, I've seen at least a dozen of those. So like you said, I've seen a lot of different scenarios, both men and women. And in the one episode, the woman had her, like you said, her bathroom had broken down. She had used it. It broke. And then she just started going in her backyard but never fixed the bathroom or even bothered cleaning it. So here, like a year later, it's still got stuff in it, and she never even bothered cleaning it. It just broke down, and she left it like that, like walked away from it and then started using the bathroom as a storage area. But because there was this, you know, feces in the toilet, it started attracting bugs, and it was just horrendous. The people walked in there, and they were in shock because they said you had to hold your breath when you walked in her bathroom. And
yeah.
It really is shocking when you see the condition that these people get their homes in, but it's almost as though they get to a point where they're like owned by their property. They don't own property. Their property owns them. And somehow they get an unnatural attachment to it. Yeah, without getting too esoteric here, the bottom line is everything has vibrations. All right, we've discussed this on the show, and I'm not going to go too far into that. But from a feng shui point standpoint, when you talk about feng shui, which is clearing your space, clearing your energy, clutter also becomes almost attractive. It starts forming its own energy, and people get caught in that are hoarders. It usually happens after some sort of a trauma or in many of the cases, well, not all of them, okay, some of them it's hereditary, some of them it's the way they were brought up or whatever, but in many, many of the shows I watch, the people were not hoarders their whole life. Some of them were, but some of the people that were not hoarders their whole life, that all of a sudden at some point they started doing it, was usually after a trauma, after losing somebody that was important to them, a husband, a wife, a parent or something like that, and they didn't recover from the loss of that individual. And all of a sudden, they started hoarding. Somehow, there was some sort of a disconnect, and they lost the ability to keep their center in order. And in some cases, they just stopped cleaning, like you said, where they would actually have garbage everywhere. And in some cases, they started collecting property. Different people would react different ways, but it was always after some sort of a trauma. That's different than people that have been that way their entire lives. That's a different type of a mental issue, you know, where they don't recognize the clutter. Now, I've always had a lot of clutter around me, but my clutter has always been organized, and it's always bothered me. So that's a big difference, you know. I never got to the point of hoarding, but there were times where I had moved into a space and I didn't have enough space to work with. So instead of putting some of my stuff in storage, I kept it around me, but it bothered me. Where a hoarder, it wouldn't bother them, you know, and then when the opportunity presented itself, I cleared my area. So if people are out there and they have clutter around them, if it's bothering you, you're not a hoarder. If it's not bothering you, then you have to question why, because then that's when there may be a situation where it could lead into collecting more and more and more clutter around you. So that's one clarification, that these people aren't bothered by it, and they're actually attached to it. They don't want to release it. And
I lost Shelley. Okay, when she realizes that I've lost her and she comes back on, we are going to discuss something she just said, because I am in a little bit of disagreement about that. She said that if it bothers you, if you see that you need to clean it up and everything, then you're probably not a hoarder. I don't think that that's true. I think that having the awareness of the fact that something isn't the way it's supposed to be doesn't mean you are not that person. So when she realizes that I've lost her, she will dial back in. And but here's some of the things that they tell you to look for. The symptoms, that they call them, in the homes of people who are compulsive hoarders, the countertops, sinks, stoves, desks, stairways, and virtually all other surfaces are usually stacked with stuff. And when there's no more room inside, the clutter may spread to the garage, vehicles, and yard. Hoarding affects emotions, thoughts, and behavior. Signs and symptoms of hoarding may include cluttered living spaces, inability to discard items, keeping stacks of newspapers, magazines, or junk mail. Moving items from one pile to another without discarding anything. Acquiring unneeded or seemingly useless items, including trash or napkins from a restaurant. Now, I've seen that. I've seen that in people that I know, their homes. They saved everything that they got from McDonald's when they did carry out. And difficulty managing daily activities, including procrastination and trouble making decisions. Difficulty organizing items, shame or embarrassment, which goes to the comment I just made when Shell said, she's back on now, by the way, everybody, that if you know that, you know, it bothers you and you have a problem with it, then you're probably not a hoarder. I don't believe that that's true. I believe you can know a lot about yourself and still not deal with it, and it doesn't make it not so. So shame or embarrassment adds to that. Excessive attachment to possessions, including discomfort letting others touch or borrow possessions. Limited or no social interactions. That was something I saw with these three shows that I just watched here recently. The two sisters, of course, were twins, and they were very, very connected. And the mother and daughter, but the other three kids never even came over. And that particular episode had a lovely ending, because family and friends and neighbors all helped clean up their house, and their house actually looked very attractive and beautiful. Now, their bedrooms, their private space, still very, very cluttered, but they had living space, and their kitchen was organized enough so that they could actually cook. And they had, for over, I think she said, several years, had eaten, slept, and it was all they did all day was watch TV in this little tiny alcove of a bed, and they both slept on it, like a single bed, the daughter, who was a little person, and the mom. And that was a very, very sad one. The two twins, I think, probably never knew anything different, so they actually could get very angry about things. And the single lady, they had a terrible time with her, because as they started throwing things away, she wouldn't let go of anything. I mean, even in some cases, out-and-out garbage, broken things. So it gets very emotional for them. People who hoard typically save items because they believe these items will be needed or have value in the future. Now, that particular sentence sounds like me. That sounds just like me. A person also may hoard items that he or she feels have important emotional significance. That also is me.
serving as a reminder of happier times, for example, or representing beloved people or pets. People who hoard may report feeling safer when surrounded by the things they save. Now, I've talked at length about my office, and I have so much stuff in here. Some things are cards. Some things are little notes, and that's why I hang on to them, because they came from somebody who I cared about and who cared about me, and I can't let go of them. So,
Rainey,
yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, see, I don't agree with that last comment, all right, that hoarding is keeping things that have sentimental value or that you feel may be useful at one time. Now, if the things that you're holding on to for sentimental value or that you think you may be able to use are encroaching on your living space to the point that your living space is dysfunctional and cramped and congested to the point where, you know, where it's not a living space, it's a storage area, then that's hoarding. But if you've got a cedar chest and you're holding on to memorabilia, cards, things like that, or if you have shelves in your home and they're filled with gifts people have given you and pictures and things like that, I don't consider that hoarding. I think that's an overbroad description. If you're holding on to, like I have a couple of boxes in my back with my tools that are like nuts and bolts and screws, and every now and then I need something and I say, and I can find a nut and bolt that fits the that fits the thing. That's not necessarily hoarding, all right? But it's when you do that to the point where you're keeping stuff that you're really never going to use. You're just keeping it because you may, but if you really took an extra 2 seconds to think about it and look at that thing, you probably are never, ever going to use it. That's the difference. Sometimes when I go through and I reorganize, I'll find stuff that I've held on to, and I say, what the heck did I hold on to this? I'm never going to use it, and I toss it, you know, because I take that extra half a second to really put some thought to it. A hoarder wouldn't be able to do that. A hoarder would never be able to say, no, I'm never going to be able to use this, and then toss it. That's the difference, okay? Somebody who's not a hoarder may hold on to things longer than they should, but at some point, they're going to be able to logic it out. Okay, where a hoarder wouldn't be able to. And that's the defining difference between somebody that may just have a cluttered space and needs to straighten things up and somebody that's a hoarder. Somebody who's a hoarder lacks the ability to then release items, throw things out, organize, and that's why they need outside help to get them there.
Well, I do think that everything you just said is true, and that's at the advanced stages. But the whole... the beginning of this, all these things that I'm reading, and I saw some of these things on the show, and all these, it amuses me that all the people that they find are so totally different, because the some of them, I mean, get angry, all kinds of swear words and throwing things and screaming.
Oh, yeah.
They try to throw away some broken $20 thing that this lady bought, and it was broken in half, and there was no way to fix it. And she started screaming and said, "No, I don't trust anybody anymore." I think the reason this paper that I'm reading, this is about how you can start understanding that you might be headed in this direction. This is not something that you, when you're five, you start hoarding. Or when you're 10, you start hoarding. And you're right about something that you said earlier that I meant to touch on, and that is the fact that a lot of times severe emotional distress, like losing somebody or a bad divorce or an illness sometimes does this too, when you become homebound and start filling your space up so that it doesn't feel empty. There's all kinds of psychological reasons for doing the things that we do. And, of course, this particular affliction has, a whole list of reasons why somebody would think that this is all right. The point is, though, everything, just like the one you just talked about, the bathroom, this is deadly. This is deadly. In a world of bacteria that has... learned to survive like MRSA, staph infections that can survive no matter what kind of antibiotic you hit it with, cockroaches and other vermin that can survive, rats that can survive no matter what kind of decon, poison, or explosive you put down for them, they still survive. These kind of disastrous messes, especially with human or animal feces, are deadly.
Right. Well, one of the shows that I had seen, Rainey, there was a woman who you had talked about that some people also hoard animals. And although their heart's in the right place, they're hoarding animals to the detriment of the animals. So what started out as a Good Samaritan act and because they love animals ended up being a tragedy because they lost the ability to care for them properly. And then this woman had dogs and cats. She had so many cats in her house that she had actually lost count. She had boxes everywhere. The town had condemned her house because, like you said, the neighbors were complaining. Her house was infested with all kinds of bugs. I mean, it was really gross. And here this woman's living there with all these animals. The dogs had messed in the kitchen so many times that it had actually rotted the floor through. I guess I thinking about it now, I don't remember, but it must have been like a mobile home or a motor home. A mobile home where it was up, and because I remember the floorboards in the kitchen were rotted through, and she had planks all over the place so she could walk around her kitchen, you know, because she didn't clean up after the animals on a regular basis. And when they started cleaning her house, because they were going to take all her animals away from her and destroy them because some of them were sick. She got very upset that she let them do it. They had to completely refloor her kitchen, and they found something like a half a dozen dead cats. And she was devastated. That's what finally turned her around, when they found all these dead cats, because it finally dawned on her that she wasn't helping anybody. You know, that she was actually hurting these animals, and it was quite an emotional, that was another trauma. On top of whatever trauma put her there, that was traumatic, because she never in her wildest imagination thought she was hurting these animals. And it was a very, very sad turning point in that particular episode for this woman. But they did. She gave away a lot of her animals. Well, they took most of them away from her, and they let her have a few back once the house was cleaned up. But what they found in this house as they cleaned and they got deeper and deeper was just horrific. And they had to go in and they had to get a professional sterilizing company in and replace a lot of the floorboards and stuff. So, I mean, the house was quite different at the end of the show. And she had to go into counseling in order to prevent her from starting to hoard animals and property again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the one that I just watched this weekend. That's what was going on there. The floor was rotted, and they ended up condemning one of the houses after they lifted all of the garbage off the floor. I mean, well, food, too. I mean, anything that is alive. People used to laugh at me in the hotel business because I talk about live garbage and garbage. And they'd say, what does that mean, Miss Rainey? And I said, well, live garbage means that it will ferment and rot. It's food, it's feces, it's a plant. I said, smell the water in a vase of flowers.
Yep.
After you've had flowers in water and they're dying and you go to throw it out, take a whiff of that water. That gives you an idea of what fermented alive does and the ability it has to, like you said, rot floors, do all kinds of terrible things to a home.
Yeah.
If water can rot your floor, when food starts to ferment and rot, it liquefies, just like the human does. And
it biodegrades. Think about that process. It's a chemical process. It biodegrades. It releases enzymes. Enzymes eat things.
Yes, exactly.
And especially plant-based food. Now, plant-based food is going to release enzymes. Meats may not. Meats are just going to cause mold and stuff. But anything that's plant-based is going to release enzymes. Enzymes deteriorate things.
Right. Meat usually turns to maggots, which is disgusting.
Right.
So The whole idea, though, of this is that there are different levels. And if you have an unhealthy attachment to a whole bunch of inanimate objects or things, then perhaps you need to analyze what's going on in your life, is what this whole Mayo Clinic report is. When to see a doctor. Hoarding ranges from mild to severe. In some cases, hoarding may not have much effect on your life, which is true, while in other cases, it affects you on a daily basis. Clutter and difficulty discarding things are usually the first symptoms of hoarding. These early indications of a problem usually surface during the teenage years. As an affected person grows older, he or she typically starts acquiring things for which there is no need or any space for. By middle age, symptoms are often severe and may be more difficult to treat. If you or a loved one has symptoms of hoarding, talk with a doctor or a mental health provider as soon as possible. Some communities have agencies that help with hoarding problems. Check with your local and or county government for resources in your area. As hard as it might be, you may also need to contact local authorities, such as the police, fire, public health, or animal welfare agencies, especially when health or safety is in question. Now, that paragraph is about what I just talked about the fact that the bacteria that grows in an atmosphere of live garbage or enzymatic garbage or anything like that is really, really, really unsafe. I mean, I have an instinct to say something, but I don't want people to take it to the bank, if you know what I mean. Some people who grow up in a world of that kind of debris and bacteria and things like that, sometimes I believe it builds a hardier immune system for whatever, just like the bugs that we've tried to kill with all the various pesticides through the years. They've evolved and have mutated into something that's very strong. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road we find out that human beings do that. I remember an older woman telling me, if you don't let your kid play in the dirt and, you know, really get dirty and scruffy and everything every now and then, their immune system is going to be horrible, Rini. And I said, what are you talking about? And this is when I was quite young. She was a country woman who had a farm, and her kids shoveled cow poop and horse poop and put it out in a compost pile. And, I mean, they did all that kind of stuff. And she said, it helps build their immune system. You have to make sure everybody knows how to wash their hands and to take a shower at the end of the day and things like that. She said, but there's something to be said for building your immune system this way. So maybe what happens with some of these people, like these two sisters, I can't get past these two sisters because they needed supervision for me, wow, as far as I was concerned. And they had an aunt, an elderly aunt, who when they finally let her in the house just started crying because she had that, you know, because they don't let people in their house anymore. They don't invite people over. They don't let anybody come in and see their home. That is also a warning factor. If you have somebody that you know like that who never opens their front door, never says stop by, you can't drop in on them unexpectedly, things like that, there may be an issue there. And maybe it's none of your business to get involved, so maybe you shouldn't, but I'm just giving you a heads up if it's somebody, you know, like your younger sister or your mom.
One of the shows I had seen was what you were talking about earlier, is that some of the people that are hoarders are recluse. So, you know, they're retired people. They're not out and about in the public eye anymore anyway. But some of the people that suffer from hoarding, like you said, are business people. They're out in the world, you know. They have responsible positions, and they're very, very good and organized at their jobs. And you would never imagine that their home nest would be like that. One of the episodes was of this woman. She was a general manager. I forgot what kind of a company she worked at, but she had a very responsible position, obviously. She was very well organized, very well respected, but nobody was ever allowed to come to her house, not even her boyfriend. She always met her boyfriend, and they were dating for 2 years, and it started bothering him. And finally, she kind of knew that there was a problem at her house, but she didn't want to face it, and it kind of, like, happened while she was working, and then she'd come home, and she was one of these people. She had a two-story house. It was a beautiful house. In her particular case, it was clutter. She just had stuff everywhere. It wasn't, she didn't have any bugs. She didn't have any rotting food. Her kitchen, there was a small area of her kitchen that was still functional. So in her case, it was just stuff. She had boxes everywhere. There was like a little tiny strip on her staircase to get up to the second floor. She had so much clothes. She was one of these hoarders that had to constantly be buying stuff. Almost on a daily basis, she would go out and buy clothes. She was very well paid. She made a lot of money. But she had hundreds of thousands of dollars in clothes, like in every room of her house, still on the hangers. A lot of them still had the price tags on them. They were just everywhere in her house. You couldn't move anywhere. And it was, when her boyfriend finally came there, it was shocking. And she actually told him on the show. The psychologist was there, helped her tell him. And he didn't leave her. He had very, very deep feeling for her, but he said it was a shock. He said if you knew her on the outside, you would never think her home looked like that. And but she wanted to get the help. It was traumatic for her, but she was not one of the hoarders that fought with the people because she recognized this was an issue. She just didn't know how to fix it. And she did need psychological help to stop buying the clothes. I mean, she had more clothes than she would wear in her entire lifetime. But she was compulsive. She couldn't stop buying them. And so she needed help with that. But in her particular case, like I said, it was just belongings and clutter. It was not a cleaning issue with her, and she didn't have garbage and rotting food. But yet she was still being surrounded by her property.
Well, I had an older friend. She's gone now. But she, actually, my brother lived with her in a double-wide, very nice mobile home. Actually, that's where my brother died, in that home. And she, matter of fact, I would go over every now and then and help clean the house because Joey stayed there, and just because I thought I should do that because she was like, I don't know, she was almost 70, I guess. But one day, she had an extra bedroom, and one day I said, do you want me to go in and run the vacuum and dust in the extra bedroom? She goes, no, I'd rather you didn't see the extra bedroom. And I said, why, you have dead bodies in there? And we laughed and everything. I said, Lori, I'm going to go dust, and, you know, because she was sneezing and picking up the AC, you know, and you distribute the dust from another room if you don't do things like that. So I go in. There were boxes and boxes and boxes of appliances that had never, ever been opened. Cooking appliances, irons, steamers, electric frying pans, probably 5 or 6 different kinds of crock pots, still in boxes, still with price tags. I said, Lori, what the hell do you need with all this stuff? She says, well, you know, I get them when they're on sale, and if I want to give them for a gift or something like that, I do that. I said, when was the last time you gave somebody a gift out of this room? She sat there looking at me. She said, I don't know. And I said, this isn't normal, honey. And she laughed at me, you know. So we laughed about it, and I forgot about it. But that is another form of hoarding, and she wasn't hurting anybody with it. You know, like you just said, you know, this lady with all the clothes and everything doesn't hurt anybody, and it's really not hurting her, but it still is a disorder. It still means that for whatever reasons, you know, you need that. Family joke at my house, when we moved to Florida in 1982, it was after my house burnt to the ground, and we had to start all over again, and we had people that donated money to us and helped us, but my insurance just paid off the building, the house, did not did not afford me any extra cash. And I struggled to get back into another house and start over again. I had four kids and Spike and I, and I mean, the first day all I could think about was clean underwear for everybody and toothbrushes. That tells you where your mind goes to, right? And years, if I drove by nice looking furniture that somebody put out to throw in the garbage, I would stop and get it and bring it home and see if I could make it work. And I thought it was a really good mode of survival until years went by and I was still doing it. And now it's still a joke. If there's furniture sitting out on a side street, everybody tries to get my attention when we're driving so I don't see it. You know, joke.
So, I don't think that falls into hoarding, though. That falls into like self-preservation or trying to keep your family in a good place. That's more of a survival instinct than hoarding. Now, if you were doing that and you had a garage full of this furniture and nobody ever used it, that's hoarding. And there were people that do that. In fact, I've actually seen some of these shows. They will actually drive around, see stuff in other people's garbage, collect it, bring it home, stick it in their garage, because they think they may use it someday because it looked halfway decent to them, and then it just sits there, and a decade later they've got a garage full of things that they're just never going to use, you know. But if you're taking something that you see because you're in a situation and your family is getting use out of it and it's in decent condition, you know, sometimes people throw out things they're just tired of and they can't really do anything with it, or maybe it's a little marked up but it's still usable. Somebody else takes it, well, that's fine, you know. I've set stuff out in the garbage, and I go out there, and 2 hours later, it's gone, and I'm like, well, great, somebody's getting use out of it. It actually makes me feel good, you know, that maybe somebody else will get use out of it, because it wasn't terrible. It just wasn't something I could donate or sell, so I set it out for garbage, and it never lasts. 2 hours later, it's gone, and that always makes me feel better, you know. But that's not hoarding, you know.
Realize. It's not hoarding, but there are different levels of the way you collect material stuff.
Right.
And,
right.
And if I, let's say I, let's go back, say 20 years ago, maybe even longer ago than that. No, but let's go 20 years ago. 20 years ago, If I saw something on the side of the road that I really thought I could use, I had no hesitation to stop and take it. And sometimes it wasn't usable, and sometimes I'd get it home and it would go out in my garbage the next day. But that's an emotional thing, because that stemmed from me not having a damn thing.
Right.
And I know, and it was typical family conversation. I would hear my kids explain to other people, their friends, Mom does things like that because our house burnt down, she lost everything, and now she's afraid she's not going to have anything. That was their assessment of my behavior, and they were right. And they were like
right.
14 years old when I'd hear them say things like that.
Very astute.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the point is that's how things blossom. That's how things grow into some of these problems, and this paperwork that I've read actually talks about the different things that can start. The two sisters that I talked about, I wanted to make sure I touched on this, because these two sisters, of course, obviously you can tell, are stuck in my head, and I'll be thinking about them for a long time. But when they were 10 years old, their father, who was 10 years older than them, was killed in the service, and they lost him.
Oh.
And years later, all these years later, like 50-some years later, they say they still had, in this mess of a house, they had his uniform. It was the only thing that was hung up, the only thing that still looked neat and tidy. His uniform from being in the service.
Oh, wow.
And when they talked about him, now they were 10 years old. Imagine, 10 years old, and when they talked about him, they both would well right up with tears and not be able to talk for a few minutes. And these two little tough cookies, I mean, four-letter words flew out of their mouths so many times, there was more beeping on part of the show than there was anything else. And it amused me to see how they dealt with losing this brother. And they didn't talk too much about the parents. So this brother must have been their hero, you know, which happens a lot with young girls. But that is what the show, you know, how they analyze a little bit about what's going on with these people. They kind of analyze the fact that at 10, their growth, their mental growth was actually stunted by the loss of this brother. And they, you know, they never grew past it. And the collection of all this stuff, they had savings. It never talked about where they worked, but they had a good retirement plan. And they were able to buy all this stuff. And, and this house was rotting on the inside. It was so bad, their house. But a lot of times that's what takes place, either a death or a bad relationship or something like that. And it's like a source of protection. It's like a way to pull in something that makes you feel, you know, protected with all this junk. Somebody called
me. Like exactly what you went through, Rainey. With the fire and losing everything, many of the episodes that I saw, people suffered that type of loss. It was either loss of property or loss of a loved one, which precipitated this. Like the young girls losing their brother, other people, it was a sibling or a spouse, but it was some intervening event of loss, and then from there forward, they started hoarding. And in many cases, like you said, it would start out little here and there, and then it would just kind of get a life of its own. That's why when I had said earlier it's all based on energy, it's almost like the attraction of the stuff ends up starting to control the people. The people aren't in control of their surroundings anymore. It's not let the people own their property. The property owns the people. And it's a very, very incapacitating and debilitating connection, because if you can't disconnect from your clutter, then you lose control of your life in other ways. And the sad thing about it is it alters their perception of life, okay? Some hoarders, like this woman, this businesswoman, she recognized there was a problem in her house. She didn't know how to stop it. Okay, and she couldn't seem to stop herself from buying more clothes until she got counseling. That particular woman was a success story because her boyfriend didn't leave her. He helped her, so that was a happy. I would say probably three-quarters of the stories did have positive outcomes because the people finally calmed down, and, you know, they always give you a little write-up at the end. You know, they engaged in continued counseling once they came in and the organization helped them clear their space. You have to continue with counseling, otherwise the house would go right back to that within a year or two, okay? So they have to go for counseling. There was only, I think, maybe three or four of the episodes where the people actually stopped, made the program stop before they were finished, and would not go through counseling. And one of them actually did lose their home. You know, when they gave the write-up at the end, they actually did lose their home at the end because they wouldn't let the show finish the cleaning they had started. The person just shut down. But that was rare. Most of the people did allow it to finish, so there were more happy endings than not. But it really, for somebody that doesn't hoard, it's mind-boggling. It's like, how do you get there? Now, like you and I have said, I do have memorabilia. I do collect things. I have a lot of research, so I have books and things like that. But I don't like the clutter around me. How many times have I told you, oh, I feel so good today because I went through and I threw out 2 pails worth of stuff. I can't stand it around me. But I end up, I will bring in stuff to work on a project, but then it bugs me, and then I have to spend a week and just clear my space again, and I can kind of get rid of a bunch of stuff, you know, where a hoarder would just keep going. They would have a bunch of clutter, and then they wouldn't see it as an issue, and then they would just add to it. And then 6 months later, they would add to it, or they would add to it on a weekly basis to the point where they couldn't breathe or even walk through their own house normally. And then they get to a point where they either don't want to change it, they're being forced to change it by family members or the city or something like that, you know. But in many cases, hoarders don't see that there's a problem, and they don't want anything altered. That was probably the prevalent issue on most of the shows. There was only a very few of them that actually felt it was a problem. Most of them didn't feel it was a problem and were only cooperating because family members were so insistent, or that there was actually being official, they were being cited by the town because their property or house was in such poor condition it was being ready to be condemned, and they were actually being forced into this whole endeavor.
Well, I saw that with the shows that I watched as well, that a lot of it was they were forced into things because of what was going on in their life. And I know that nobody likes to be forced into doing anything. We get that totally. And if it isn't your own idea, often it's too difficult for you to go through. But on the same token, if you realize you have a problem, that's half the battle. And I think that one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today was the fact that, like anything in this life, like any of our problems, awareness of the problem is step one. Treatment of the problem is in there someplace, but not necessarily at the forefront. Usually, realization that you have a problem is what has to come first. And that seems to be the hardest step. That seems to be the most difficult place to get to, is to say, oh, yeah, I guess I might have a problem. And seriously addressing it. Like I said, it's no skin off my nose if people like to collect things. I mean, look at your very, very wealthy people. They collect automobiles, material things, jewelry. Nobody sees anything wrong in that. And collectibles, like you say. And, of course, I realize and I feel very strongly about the things that the memorabilia that I have collected through the years. And not saying that I have a mental disorder over it, nor does anyone else if they collect memorabilia. Because like you just said, a hope chest was a part of our lives years ago. A hope chest is something that gave you things and you put it in there, maybe your first set of linen napkins. Those things don't happen anymore. Young girls, if I say something like that to Crystal, who plans on marrying my grandson, she'd say, what's a hope chest, Graham? And she wouldn't have a clue what I was talking about. So there's various, how about people who collect Hummels? You ever been in the house somebody who's been collecting Hummels all their lives, and they're everywhere? I collect music boxes. I have about 40 copper music boxes all on shelves here in my home. Mm-hmm. I don't consider that an issue. I consider that a hobby.
Right.
What I think I'm concerned about with the hoarding thing, and I've seen Shelley's desk. I've seen Shelley with piles around herself so high when she's working on something that you have to, like, peek over the top to see Shelley. So it's an organized... They're organized piles, and she keeps them within hand's reach so that she can complete a job, a task that she's given herself or someone else has given her. I'm not talking about those kind of things, to be honest with you. I think we are all, in one way or another, a hoarder. I know a lot of people who have too many animals. Why? Maybe because their animals reproduced and they didn't have the heart to get rid of them. Or maybe because they can't say no when somebody says, oh, I'm moving and I'm going to have to leave my cat here, and they take the cat. There's lots of different reasons why people do that as well. I'm talking about an illness that is so bad that it's hazardous to your personal health.
Right.
I'm talking about a home that you cannot walk through, that you cannot invite friends into, and that you're no longer safe in. Yes, it takes steps to get to that place, and if you think that you're headed in that direction, then I hope you're going to pay attention to everything we said today. I hope that you're going to realize that in order to have your own personal energy be in a good place, a free moving place, energy moves, and if it's all packed in, it can't move. You need to be able to stretch, and you need to be able to live in a safe and hygienic atmosphere. So I'm not, you know, I talked about my own issues here with all my collectibles and all my stuff, and I'm just your typical old lady. It's a lifetime of memories for me.
Right.
And,
you have a beautiful home. It's wide and open and inviting. It feels good when you walk in there. You know what I'm saying? If you were a hoarder, your home wouldn't have that feel to it. So yeah, you've got all these memorabilias, but they're endearing. So when people walk through your house and they see the different things that you're collecting, you know, your teapots and your music boxes and things like that, it's like walking into a museum and you're looking at beautiful artifacts and things. You know, it feels good. And that's the difference. Collectibles, collecting, even if you collect a lot of something, that's not necessarily hoarding. I knew a woman who was a doll collector. Although dolls freak me out. In this particular case, this woman, she actually thought it was funny when people thought it was creepy, but she had all these dolls, but she collected them over a lifetime. She had over 150 dolls in her house, like in every room of her house. Again, it wasn't,
wow.
That wasn't hoarding. You know, although some people found it was creepy because they were the dolls with the porcelain faces, and some of them looked like real little children and stuff, and those kind of dolls I don't like. But this was her passion. And she had them from Germany and Switzerland and antique dolls that were over 100 years old, and, you know, and they were just everywhere in her house. But she had a beautiful home, and except for all these dolls everywhere, her house was very clean and tidy. Again, that's not hoarding. Collecting, even if you collect to an extreme, you're just an extreme collector then. If your house is functional and clean and you have your collections displayed, or you have your memorabilia stored, like I have a couple boxes of memorabilia. I don't consider that hoarding. I don't consider it clutter. It's in nice, neat boxes. You know, they're in plastic bins, and I keep them in a particular area, and I pull them out once in a while, and I look through it, and it makes me feel good to see some of this memorabilia I've held on to. All right? That's just normal. I think a lot of people do that. A lot of people collect different things. A lot of people have memorabilia. But it's when what you're collecting doesn't serve you. Like you're collecting, like the one woman you told about who had all the appliances in boxes. If you're collecting things like that that you bought on sale thinking you're going to do something with them, obviously that's not endearing. That's not benefiting anybody. That's behind closed doors. It's not doing anything for you. Then you have an issue. Is what you're collecting something that gives you pleasure when you look at it or when other people look at it? Or is it something you're collecting for a rainy day, and the reality is that rainy day is never going to happen? And the perfect example is the woman who kept buying appliances on sale, sticking them in a room, and then never gifting them, never actually using them. So there is a clear defining point to whether or not you're just a collector, somebody holding on to meaningful memorabilia, or you're somebody who has hoarding tendencies.
Yeah. We got to go. We're out of time. Thank you. This is a great show. I think we'll do more shows on hoarding as we learn more, as people touch base with me and give me more information. But for now, everybody go out there and have a great, great day. We'll be back tomorrow morning. And I'm hoping to have a guest with me tomorrow to talk about teenage addiction again. And Thursday, Joel Smith, I'm hoping, is going to join us if we can keep everything functioning properly. So everybody go out there and do your best to have a great day. God bless, and we love you, and see you tomorrow morning. Bye, Shell.
Bye, Reen. Have a wonderful day, everyone.